We are going to be talking about scientific evidence for the paranormal. This is an incredible story. The book is called Life Force, The Scientific Basis. Claude Swanson joins me in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Dr. Claude Swanson is an MIT and Princeton educated physicist. He has worked as a conventional applied physicist for more than 20 years, conducting extensive research into the physics of the paranormal. His research has involved scientific measurements in places like haunted houses, experiments in remote viewing and psychokinesis, testing of new devices of which can be used to measure very strange forces. Here he is back on Coast to Coast, Claude Swanson. Claude, how are you?
I'm great, George. Great to be back.
Good to have you. You know, I asked you this a year ago. Might as well ask you again for new listeners. What the heck is a physicist doing dabbling in the paranormal?
Well, physics is supposed to be about the frontier, and this seems to be the frontier. These are all the things they did not teach me about in school, and a few years after I got out, I began hearing about remote viewing, and when I learned about it, I realized, you know, this stuff is impossible to explain by our current Western physics, and yet it's real. I've taken remote viewing courses myself. I've studied all the research about it. These abilities are possible to link in with events that are far away in space and in time. As you know, our remote viewing program, the military ran for over 20 years. That data has been looked at, very, very successful. So we have these abilities, and the question is, how in the heck does that work, and how can science explain it? And when I realized it involves a force that is not in our Western physics today. So as a scientist, that got my curiosity up, how in the world to explain remote viewing. And it turns out all the other paranormal phenomena like ESP and psychokinesis and things like that are all connected to the same force. So it's very exciting to try to understand this force.
What did your colleagues say to you, Claude, when you started at least publicly showing some interest in this?
Well, I didn't really ask them their opinion.
And didn't care.
It's one of those things when you're at the forefront, you have to just kind of proceed based on the evidence, and people will come along. What has happened over the past 15 or 20 years, as I've continued to research this area, I've been astonished how much evidence has shown up that supports this subject and these forces, that the Chinese, the Russians, Eastern Europeans have done a lot of research in this area. So I think that the mainstream scientists will come along in due course.
You know, Claude, I was at the City of Hope over the weekend. Our network is working on a benefit in our holding company, and they wanted us to learn more about this organization. And I'm glad I went out there because I met some great people. And I met a lot of, you know, scientists and biologists and molecular structured people. And we started talking, and I met one who will ultimately be a guest on this program. And she really captured me because she's like you. She didn't talk just in pure science, pure physics. She's a molecular biologist and chemist, but she really understands that there's something else out there. And it's this quest, it's this passion to try to find that answer that keeps driving her. And I've got to assume it keeps driving you, too.
Absolutely. You know, it's when you're in school and you study the history of science, you study how the great discoveries were made, they're all kind of a long time ago. We kind of turn the scientists into gods a lot of times, and we oftentimes our historical description of new discoveries makes it seem very easy and very straightforward. And what it's actually like when you're in a new area without much support from others, people kind of think you're crazy, there's not much evidence for it, the evidence is contradictory, it's a very different feeling, but it's kind of exciting. It's what science should be all about. So I'm actually very happy and very privileged to be able to explore what I think really is a new force in physics, and this new force will explain a lot of the controversial areas that we call the paranormal. It'll explain ghosts, and it'll explain out-of-body experiences. It'll explain ESP, remote viewing. So, you know, frontier that is left to explore that I'm aware of. It really is where consciousness comes into science, where the last 100 years we've kind of kept that out of science, even though 100 years ago Einstein and Niels Bohr had these big debates about consciousness, about how it does relate to quantum physics. And yet mainstream Western science has kind of ignored the effects of consciousness, and now we're finding these masters who can create effects from consciousness that just change the laws of physics. So we have to study it.
So there is a science behind the paranormal.
Absolutely.
That's exciting. Yeah. That's exciting. Your new book out called Life Force, The Scientific Basis. Tell me about the title.
Well, it's in a way the next step. You know, my first book, Synchronized Universe, I went through these various kinds of paranormal phenomena like out-of-body experiences, ESP, remote viewing, etc. What's the best scientific evidence for each of these different phenomena? Even though they fly in the face of conventional Western physics, this kind of showed that these things really occur. We have good evidence for it, and it left open the question, how do we explain it? In Life Force, I really take the next step and try to look at what the force is that makes it possible to do these things. How is it possible that energy healers can heal somebody 10,000 miles away? They can affect the outcome of physics experiments thousands of miles away. We can measure these effects. So Life Force is really about this energy that has been left out of Western physics that accounts for all these things. It's what the Chinese call qi. There are traditions in, you know, traditional societies, many places in the world, that use this as their primary means of healing. But in Western science, it doesn't really exist. So it's time to bring this in and make a scientific study of it.
Well, that's exciting. It's out there. Do we know? Do you come up with your own conclusions, Claude, on the how part of it?
I do.
You do? Okay. We will get into that, because that is one of the questions that continues to baffle me. So if you can help us with some of those answers, or at least steer us in a direction, that would help a lot. Because all my life, I've asked that question, the why and the how, all my life. It's frustrating.
I think we're there. I think we have an answer now.
All right, great. Now, Rostam Roy, late professor. He was at Arizona State University, Penn State. He was a different kind of a professor, because he looked at alternative medicine, science. He was an advocate of religions, yet he was a scientist. What do you know about him?
Yeah, I had the chance to interact with him quite a bit the last several years of his life, and really came to admire him tremendously. Of course, he has a huge body of work, maybe 1,000 papers or something close to that he published in many different areas, but a creative man, open to new ideas, and he was very much very enthusiastic about the study of these phenomena. I think he knew in his gut that these things were real, and it was time for science to take a look at it and try to understand them.
He called it something himself, didn't it? Didn't he? He had his own name for all this?
I'm not sure.
I think he did. Tour de force or something like that.
Could be, yeah. I know he liked my book very much. It came out the last few months of his life, and he was very happy with the book, the Life Force book that I wrote. He thought it really did a lot for taking this whole subject the next step. So,
what influences, Claude, in your opinion, this life force? What are the factors out there?
Well, the life force in a nutshell, really, really quickly, is, I would say, it's the fabric of space-time. You know, people like Lynn McTaggart have written good books about the nature of the zero-point energy, the qualities of what we call empty space, which is not really empty at all. There's lots of energy that's present there at the very small scales. It's fluctuating. It's kind of the essence of physics. Really, one of the big questions of physics, the nature of the vacuum. One of the things that's been left out of the vacuum is this energy that I'm calling the life force. The Russians call it torsion, and it was really discovered in the 50s by a Russian scientist, Kozarev. It's really the equivalent of what the Chinese call qi, but you can think about it as the fabric of space-time. Think about it as tiny little particles that are flying around at very small scales, smaller than the normal scales of quantum physics, smaller than the scales of atoms, et cetera, they fill space, and they really, it's their motion that determines how the space behaves. So our conventional physics is based on the idea that this flux, this fabric of space, is kind of always the same. It's on the average. It's what we're used to. So our physics is all built on assuming that. But because it's really made of tiny little particles called photons, the Russians call them photons, they're little elementary torsion waves, therefore it doesn't have to always be the same. It can be different. And in different regions of space, it turns out the amount of one type versus the other. They say there are two different types of this photon energy. One spins to the left, one spins to the right. One pushes time forward, one pushes time backwards. So what we call an average condition is really a mixture of these two that has the sort of normal ratio, the standard ratio we're used to that makes our conventional physics. But you can change that ratio, and that's what the human mind does. That's what a Qigong master does. That's what happens in paranormal phenomena. You can speed up time. You can slow down time. There are regions of space where astronomers find that space is not the normal conditions. They call it regions of dark matter and dark energy. In one, there's too much gravity. In one, there's too little gravity. There's a repulsion effect. In our Western science, this is a huge mystery. Nobody was expecting this. But in Russia, this is actually part of the torsion theory. It's what they would expect. So these big mysteries all really tie together, and the answer is torsion. It's really the explanation for what the life force really is.
You know, these various aspects of phenomena, the hauntings, ghosts, remote viewing, psychokinesis, healing, they're all tied together, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm. There's that connection. Let's talk about the different facets of this for a moment, Claude. Long-distance healing has always fascinated me. I, for some time, always thought maybe the healer was able to get the person who was healed excited or thinking about it, and it worked that way, rather than the healer having any powers or not. Now I'm not so sure anymore. Now I think the healer may be the one to do it, and the other person's just the recipient. What did your research show you?
Well, I have a good friend who is a strong healer who works out of St. Louis, Missouri.
Well, that's one of my hometowns. I might even know the person.
Great area. Well, his name is Rich Berry. He's a good friend.
Okay.
And he's been a good advisor to me. He was one of the encouragements for this book because his clients would feel the energy, and they would say, "How in the world did you do that?" Because they'd be miles away from him. And like other good healers, they can often see in their mind's eye a holographic image of the person they're working on. So they can actually look at that image and tell what part of the body the person has a problem with. And they can work with that image in their mind and actually change the field and heal the physical issue. And there's lots of scientific evidence from long-range healing to show that this really does go on. It's not a psychosomatic effect, not a psychological effect. People actually do have physical changes and healings from long-range healing. So we know this works. The Chinese, I have a lot of evidence in one of the chapters of my book about some of these very strong Chinese healers. They're called Qigong masters. And they use this energy, which they call qi.
They could knock someone over with this energy, can't they?
They could knock the people over. That's called empty force.
Yep.
And I have examples in there of this. So it's a method of fighting, actually. That's a very old martial art that a few people have mastered. So there are forms of this energy which can produce very powerful effects that leave no doubt that it's real. I have examples of one of the greatest Qigong masters, Dr. Yan Jin, who can actually change the rate at which radioactive materials decay. If they're giving off alpha particles, for example, he can make them give them off faster or slower than what they're supposed to be doing. That's something that our science can't explain, but that's one of the powers of qi. It really does change the nature of space-time, and it changes physical processes that we thought we understood and we thought were unchangeable.
Are these healers and these Chinese Qigong experts, drawing something in from the universe?
I think that's a fair way to say it. When they energize, they get powered up. This chi energy, the life force energy, is present in the atmosphere.
It's always there, right? So
a lot of it comes from the sun. It comes from other physical processes that's produced in our environment, and the sun is a very strong source of it. But it turns out it also responds to thought. So typically, when a healer is building up his energy, he'll be breathing in, but also be focusing a certain thought in his mind about building up this energy in his body. And then they will be able to collect the yin or the yang energy, the masculine or feminine spin, in one part of the body and then project it from the hands or something else. So the reason this energy is unusual and the reason it has such an important role in healing is that it does respond to consciousness. So it has the physical effects, but it also responds to the mind. So it's a new kind of force.
It is truly amazing at how that works. And we've seen it with so many people. What if the person, the recipient, doesn't believe it? Can it still occur?
Yes, it doesn't seem to make much difference.
Okay. All right. And are there some healers who are more powerful than others?
Absolutely. Dr. Yan Xin, who's been highly studied in China by their National Physics Institute, there's a whole book written about him, which I talk about in my book. There are, a dozen scientific papers that have been published. There was one example of a man who was a very famous man in China who was dying, and they finally rushed in Dr. Yan Xin from, even while he was in the vehicle, tens of miles away from the hospital, he was sending energy to this man. And from being on his deathbed, by the time they got there, he was sitting up and he was feeling a whole lot better. And some of the effects that master healers like this can achieve are totally baffling to our Western ideas. There are people who've had bones broken, seriously broken, and within a few minutes of a healing session, their bones will test under X-rays. The cracks will all have disappeared. They'll be able to lift objects. There are some really baffling effects that occur in the presence of a powerful healer.
That is dramatic. It really is. Can something go wrong with that kind of healing? Can they give you too much juice, basically?
I suppose it's possible. They don't seem to have published those papers.
No, they don't. But I've always wondered about that. I've just, if the healer would draw too much energy, if something, opposite could occur.
I think the other part of energy healing that will take a long time for Western scientists to adjust to is there's a spiritual part. A lot of times, when you're doing healing, well, like Reiki is a more well-known example, but they're all kind of related to each other. Oftentimes, the healer will also ask for help from spirit. They'll invoke higher guides, spirit guides, things like that, to take part in the healing. If you read Barbara Brennan's books on Hands of Light.
She's good.
Yeah, and they oftentimes draw or paint in pictures of spirits who show up and help with the healing process. Several years ago, my ex-wife had a long story, but she ended up in a very serious physical condition in the hospital on death's door, basically.
All right, and hold on for a second, Claude, because I want to get that full story in when we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, this Saturday, I'm going to be at the Mystic Journey Bookstore. A little book signing, a little Q&A session. It's going to start at 7 o'clock at night. Information on our highlight reel for you at Coast to Coast AM. It is in Venice, California. So those of you who want to roller skate over there, come on by. We'll be back in a moment more with Dr. Claude Swanson as we talk about his latest work, Life Force, the Scientific Basis, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Dr. Claude Swanson with us. Claude, you were talking about a story, I believe, with your wife, if you want to explain it.
Sure. I don't consider myself a very, a very accomplished energy healer, but I've had a little bit of training, and I got this call late one night. she had, we've been divorced for several years, and she had walked into a hospital emergency room on the East Coast. I was in Colorado. It was about 1 a.m. The physician called me. All she remembered was my name and phone number. She was delirious, and he wasn't quite sure what the problem was. It turned out she had a ruptured appendix, a ruptured colon, and it had gone septic. And but anyway, all I got was that he needed permission to do something, and it was very critical. Clearly, the things were on the edge, whether she would live or not, because it had gone for several hours. Well, after the phone call, I began trying to do my own energy healing on her to do my best, but I don't consider myself very strong, and it felt kind of feeble. And as I did it for a few minutes, I realized I needed to have somebody better. So I called my friend Rich in St. Louis, and it was about 2 or 3 a.m. there, and he said he'd woken up about 5 minutes before. So I asked him to begin helping me. Within a few minutes, in my mind's eye, I could see these tall light beings kind of entering the space where she was. And all this, of course, is in one's mind, so you can't prove anything by it, but that was my impression, that once that happened, I realized things were going to be okay. He's a much more powerful healer than I was, and it just kind of backs up the idea that is reported in lots of experiments and descriptions in energy healing, that there are these spirit beings who seem to play a role. So when you ask about things can go wrong or too much energy, things like that, that may well be, but I do think that's one of the things science is going to have to deal with in terms of intelligences that are non-material and how they can be explained and how what role they play in this whole process. Years ago, I visited John of God in Brazil.
Right.
And I had my own direct experiences there with these the non-corporeal intelligences, and I could feel things happening inside the body. So it's a whole other part of the science, but it's pretty interesting.
What did you think of him?
I was blown away by the whole process. I didn't know what to think when I went down there. I wanted to describe him in my book, but I wanted to have firsthand experience because I had people, friends of mine, who had very good experiences, but on the internet, there's plenty of scary stories and rumors and things like that, so I wasn't sure what to make of it all. As I was driving in the taxi, riding in the taxi cab, coming into the small town of Abajania, where he has his center, about a half mile away, I experienced this change of energy. There was this peaceful, blissful energy that sort of flowed over me like a wave, and it stayed with me for the 3 weeks I was there. It was a very different feeling from what I was used to. And I talked to many people in the hotel while I was staying there, and I heard over and over again miraculous stories of people who had their own experiences. So there's no question in my mind that something very special goes on there.
Did he ever explain where he got these powers?
Well, of course, he speaks Portuguese.
Right,
and I don't,
right.
So he never explained it to me. I think, spiritism, which is practiced by many people in Brazil, is this practice of allowing spirits to take over your body. And in his case, there are these fairly high beings. A lot of them are famous saints or famous doctors or scientists. St. Ignatius Loyola, supposedly, is one of them. When these beings enter his body, he has no conscious recollection of it. People who know him well can tell that the physical changes that take over his body at that time, which particular being is present, incorporated in him. He'll do these operations, scraping on the eyeballs and things like that without even looking at the person. He'll talk to the crowd while he's doing them. So it's clear that it's not his physical body that's doing it. I had one friend who was a lawyer from England who lived in my hotel with me, and he came over there for eye surgery. He had had glaucoma and cataracts, and he wanted John of God to fix him. And he was an educated barrister in England, and I had some conversation about why he'd chosen this particular route. But I was also able to watch him while he had the operation done. A Danish photographer filmed it, And afterwards in the hotel, I said, well, what was it like? Did you feel any pain? Within 3 or 4 days, his right eye was markedly better. His vision was coming back. Within a couple of weeks, he had 20/20 vision in both eyes.
That's amazing.
So, you know, I have my own little set of stories like that that convince me there's something very real going on there.
Are we tapping into some kind of divine intelligence?
I think that's fair to say. I think for me, the significance of the life force energy is that it, while it affects our physics and affects things we can measure, it also ties us in to higher dimensions, to what we would call the world of spirits, things like that. So it's a bridge between the normal three-dimensional world we're used to and the higher dimensional world. So I think it starts to bring in and reunite spirit with science.
Let's talk a little bit about remote viewing, Claude, and then we'll come back to some of these other aspects of this intelligent design, because this is a very fascinating aspect of this. I've always been perplexed. I understand remote viewing, but I want you to be the devil's advocate for a moment. How people can see without their eyes like that by remote viewing? How do you think it works?
Well, I talk about that in the book. It all goes back to the very special qualities of this energy that I call the life force. The Russians call torsion. By the way, it's probably almost the same thing that David Wilcox calls the source field.
Right.
It's a universal property of space-time. You can think of it as the fabric of space-time. The unusual thing about it is it has particles traveling forward in time and particles traveling backward in time, which means that we are able to connect with virtually any other place in the universe and any other time in the universe by the way we focus these particles. And I talk about this in the book, but I call it four-dimensional holography. It's, you know, a hologram. You're kind of focusing light waves in a certain way so you make what looks like a picture in three dimensions. If you have four-dimensional holography, you have particles that are traveling backwards in time as well as particles traveling forward in time. So you can make a focused image at any point in space and time with energies like this. And so I really think that's what happens. The human mind couples to these particles all the time. I think we're kind of built to interact with this energy, this torsion energy. One of the discoveries of acupuncture points, the points on the body, the 700 points where acupuncture energy is manipulated by acupuncturists, it turns out from Professor Joey Jones, we know that these points actually twist. They undergo a little torsion or a twist when they're activated. That would make them a filter for this torsion energy. So we probably tune and receive and project and use this energy in a very natural way all the time. So I think the mind couples in with this field. And when we visualize something happening in the distance, we're trying to focus our minds on a distant event, a distant person, that really we are coupling our torsion energy of our mind so that we're so, you know, able to holographically couple to that distant event. I talk about it more in the book in a more coherent way with pictures.
Right, right.
But that's the basic idea.
It is amazing, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, just, and I've interviewed
all to be able to do this.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We dabble, we try, but I mean, just to be able to do that, and to peer into things, it's just truly remarkable. You have talked about crop circles, and you've got some experience with that. Well,
yes,
what happened?
I was not prepared for crop circles. I went over there in 99, in the summer of 99, in August of 99, I guess. And Art Bell, of course, had been on the radio in those days.
Mm-hmm.
When I decided I have to be there, within that next several days, there were two or three shows in the wee hours about crop circles.
Yeah.
Including a couple of friends of mine who were out there in the circles, so I knew I had to get there. When I arrived, I landed in Heathrow about 6 or 7 in the morning on a Saturday, and as I landed, I realized in my haste, I didn't even know where I was going. You know, Art made it sound like everybody in England was agog about the crop circles, but when I tried to find out from asking people where they are, no one seemed to know.
They didn't even know about it.
They didn't.
No.
But once I located them, And I had assumed that crop circles were a visual phenomenon because you look at the pictures, they're so beautiful and so structured, you think it's a visual phenomenon.
That's right.
When I got there, I met Ron Russell, and I had my several days out in the fields. And what I discovered is it's an energetic process. There's subtle energy that is produced by those patterns that create feelings, create awarenesses that I was not used to. And the longer I was there, each crop circle has a different energetic pattern. They're like a sacred site. You have a special feeling of sacredness, of quietness, and as you're there longer, you become more perceptive of the energies. By the third or fourth day, I began being able to see some of the energies that were present around these crop circles, the same way that a energy healer can see auras. It's the same type of thing. And so I began to feel that, oh, while the crop circles might be involved with healing the earth to some extent, they're also awakening us. They're drawing our attention to subtle energy and these old customs that were thousands of years old that caused ancient societies to build the great stone monuments like Stonehenge and Avebury. These large stone formations do the same thing the crop circle does. They take the energy that's flowing in the earth and they create it into patterns that create feelings of sacredness and altered states for those who are there. So I began to feel like, you know, they're teaching us, they're awakening us up to a history that we've forgotten.
You know, and I've told people, even if one crop formation is real, that's incredible. That's incredible, even though I think most of them might be.
Yeah, I talked to a couple of the crop circle makers who, you know, admit that they are involved in active creation of the circles, but they say that even so, the best circles typically that they make, you have to meditate first, you have to pray first when you come up with a design, and when they're out in the field, they often see an extra person that was not part of their team.
That's right.
They often encounter balls of light. They often, you know, they'll go back to the pub, take a break, and come back at 1 or 2 in the morning or something, and come back, and the crop circle will be finished. Or they'll go home, and they'll come back the next day, and things have been added to it. So they acknowledge there's something extra going on that's not human.
No, not at all. We're with Dr. Craig Swanson, of course. His book, Life Force, The Scientific Basis. Ley lines, you've studied those. Explain them.
Well, it appears that ley lines are structures in the earth. Some of them are natural, that often occur along fault lines. Some of them have been manipulated by man. They will dig trenches. They will do things to change the humidity or the flow of water underground. A lot of times it's a combination of things that are worked by people as well as natural formations along aquifers where water flows. And it appears to me that what they're really designed for is carrying the subtle energies, carrying this chi energy through the ground. Typically, it'll come into the Earth's surface from the sun, from various other heavenly bodies that are flowing or move around the world. So we have this flow or motion of subtle energy along the Earth's surface, and they tend to get channeled into ley lines, and then typically they'll get gathered at a sacred site, at a stone formation. The purpose of the positioning of the stones is to control the flow of this energy in the ground. That appears to me to be the primary purpose of it. If you go back to ancient traditions, and this is true not just in England, where they call them ley lines, and they have ceremonies in the planting season and in the harvest season, there's a very strong ley line that moves across England from northwest to southeast. I'm sorry, I got that backwards.
Well, and are there many ley lines on the planet?
There are. Yeah, there are. They're found in many ancient. They're found in China. They're found in Australia. They're found in South America. They're found in England. And typically, where they're found, there's an association of these megalithic sites. And for example, in Australia, they're called song lines. and the native peoples there have ceremonies. They will walk along these lines, singing to them, sending energy to them. They believe that these lines carry the special energy, the life force energy, that fertilizes the crops, that gives them an abundant harvest. In China, they're called dragon lines, but it's the same purpose, the same function there. They call the masters feng shui masters, who are masters of the energy in the land. So this tradition seems to be very old, and it's worldwide.
Do these ley lines, are they just on the planet, or do they zoom out into space?
Well, there are some people who say they zoom out into space. I know Eric Pearl, with his healing method, he makes use of ley lines that do that. I don't know a lot about that, but at this point, I've learned so many impossible, strange things that I don't rule anything out at this point.
No, you can't. Not at all. Auras. You've studied them?
Yes, I have. That was one of the things that drew me into this subject in the first place, is what is an aura? After all, energy healers look at a person, they can see the aura oftentimes, and they use the appearance of the aura to diagnose whatever illnesses the person might have. Then they work with the aura to rebalance it, to get the person healthy again. So the question is, what is it? Because it's very hard to measure it. Typically, with the measurements we understand, electromagnetic-type measurements, you don't see much of anything. The answer appears to be, again, it's this torsion field, the life force field I mentioned earlier, that extends beyond the skin. It's outside the body. It's connected with the biophotons that are produced by the DNA molecules in our cells. One of the really positive achievements, I think, in my book that I was really proud of, is I came up with a coherent, comprehensive picture of how all this fits together. The Germans, Fritz Albert Popp, as you may know, for 30 years or more now, has been working with what he calls biophotons.
Right.
These are little pulses of light that DNA molecules in our body produce. They use it for communication and for control of other molecules. It's a very important subject that he's shown is so important in governing health and repair and metabolism, et cetera. It turns out that one of the big mysteries has been, how does DNA know to act differently in different parts of the body? Because the DNA molecule is the same in every cell in our bodies, and yet the DNA in a hair follicle, the DNA in your liver, will make different cells, different proteins, than the DNA in some other part of your body.
I'm convinced that the DNA, which could be very well be like a cell's brain, that a cell is intelligent. There's no question about it. They're able to do incredible things.
Absolutely, absolutely. And what Fritz Albert Popp discovered and concluded is that the net effect of all these DNA molecules producing little light pulses, they act coherently like a laser, and they produce a hologram of the blueprint of the body. So a DNA in one particular part of the body will read that hologram.
No doubt. Stay with us, Claude. We're going to come back and more with you.